SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number three, live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. Olympic action and a preview on this Tuesday. We will get you here in this third and final hour. It is also deadline day around MLB. Our Major League Baseball insider, Craig Mish, joins us up next for a daily rendition of the Daily Bases with an added emphasis today on deadline day in Major League Baseball. And Win Total Tuesday continues here with a focus on the AFC South to start off this third and final hour.
Craig promised me if anything big goes down with the Philadelphia Phillies, I will be shared into that knowledge, which means if Mike Trout is on the move, if anything is going towards the Philadelphia Phillies today, it will be shared with me first, and I will get to break that news. So there you go.
The only thing that I care about, Craig Mish on the phone, looking like breaking news is happening that he can share with us. A text, a call. I don't care if he interrupts either of us. I want him in insider mode when Daily Bases starts. Friezo, please let him know. That is what the standard that we hold him to today. Yep. If Craig is already in our virtual green room, I hope he can hear me. Let's continue Win Total Tuesday DRS around the AFC South. We have focused on the two top teams in the division, the Texans and the Jaguars. 9.5 the total for Houston. The over has the juice at minus 150. Expected to win the division and be a double-digit win team. The Jags have some juice on the over at minus 115 of that win total of 8.5. Expected to be above 500, contend for the top spot in the division, maybe a wild card spot around the AFC. But there were three teams last year in the AFC South that finished with a winning record, and that included the Indianapolis Colts. Almost improbable, much in the same way that Houston got to the postseason. A similar conversation for Indy. Don't forget, it was a winner-take-all game, week number 18 on that Saturday night to decide the division, and the Colts had a lead late in that second half. But it wasn't the rookie quarterback under the rookie head coach that led Indianapolis to that point. Anthony Richardson only played in four games, had season-ending shoulder surgery early on in October. It was Gardner Minshew. He's no longer in Indy. AR is healthy and ready to take the reins into his sophomore, but really, truly rookie season in Indianapolis. What is your outlook, Donnie, for the Colts? A win total of 8.5.
Yeah, it's really a shame here that we're not getting the true like knowledge that we need on that quarterback position. Because I would love to have seen him last year, even if the Colts would end up winning five or six games, you can say, okay, young rookie quarterback played 17 games, got beat up a little bit there, but learned a lot. Now it's a full offseason to get ready. You know, still banged up in the offseason, getting injured last year. And yes, you could take your mental reps and you're still in the NFL. I understand that. It's better than nothing. But I feel like we're getting that evaluation period once again in the month of September, October. And the most important evaluation is, hey, kid, can you at least just stay healthy to be out there? Because that's the best availability. The one thing we do love about the Colts, I like Shane Steichen. I think he's a really good head coach and a quality offensive mind that's going to put this kid in the best possible position to win football games. You know what else you can lean on? An absolutely mashing, physically dominant offensive line, which is a great best friend to have for a young quarterback. And also a running game. That's Jonathan Taylor. If he's entering into the season 100% healthy and ready to go and not worrying about contract deals here, that's going to be great. I think the offense should be provided to put up points. I think the defense will be okay. But it's one of those things where I evaluated C.J. Stroud last year. Yeah, he looks like a good quarterback. I'm not worried about him this year. Trevor Lawrence, we've seen him for a couple years. I'm not all that worried about him. The only reason why I'm worried about Anthony Richardson has been because I haven't seen him enough here. He could be explode onto the scene, or he could do what he did last year, run around a lot, make exciting plays, score touchdowns, and not finish football games when, quite frankly, by the way, the backup quarterback situation on the Colts, I don't have the let me bring up the depth chart quickly because they had a damn good one last year. Minshew, to me, is a better backup quarterback in that offense than Joe Flacco. So I'm looking at a downgrade there, which means you really need to stay healthy, Anthony Richardson, us, Keaton Slovis, Jason Bean out of Kansas, and then you take a look at Joe Flacco. He needs to stay healthy this year.
Jason Bean won me a lot of bets during his day in Lawrence at KU, so let's not slander Mr. Bean here on this Tuesday morning. But I would agree, right? Gardner Minshew had the familiarity with Shane Steichen. He was his backup quarterback in Philadelphia. It was a natural transition to Indianapolis. Now, I can't wait to see what Anthony Richardson does this year. Some promise for sure in the four games that he started last year, but only completed two of them. More rushing touchdowns, four, than passing scores, three. And the big knock against AR, and rightfully so, his only full year as a starter at Gainesville at Florida, 53.8% completion percentage. It wasn't great at times last year with the elevation in the National Football League. A supreme athlete, a rocket of an arm, a guy that uses his physicality and athleticism, of course, to his benefit. But when that is the case, of course, it calls into question his health. And when he only played four games, only completing two in his rookie year, and had to have season-ending shoulder surgery, there are going to be some natural causes of concern. We hope Anthony Richardson is fully healthy for all 17 games for Indianapolis. But even if that's the case, Donnie, what exactly is the pure picture? Again, this is really Anthony Richardson's rookie year in the National Football League. It really is. And last year, entering his first rookie season, Indy's win total was 6.5. It's 8.5 now. The under has the juice. I think it's fair. I think it's sharp, as you alluded to earlier. I do not expect them to be a 5-12 football team. I'm just not sure I see them as a double-digit win football team either. They will contend for that winning mark that they had a season ago at 9-8. And it's one of the reasons I find the AFC South truly compelling, because what is the true picture in Indianapolis? Similar thought to Nashville. Will Levis is the quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. We've got a lot of young arms in this league. 3 second-year guys that were all drafted either in the first round or the second pick of the second round. That is Will Levis. And, of course, Trevor Lawrence entering year number four, the former number one overall pick. Now, the Titans said, all right, we're going to start to break things down. Derrick Henry, the staple of this franchise, you're gone. Ryan Tannehill, you're gone. Will Levis is our future. But we're going to build things back up. Okay. A team hitting the reset button, kind of building it up from the bottom and building that foundation once again. And then Rand Carthen in the front office in Nashville said, on second thought, let's give Tony Pollard a 3-year, $24 million deal. Let's pay Calvin Ridley a ton of money, a 4-year, $92 million deal. Let's make some other interesting moves, like bringing Tyler Boyd over to reunite with his former offensive coordinator in Cincinnati and first-year head coach Brian Callahan. I thought this would be a Titans organization freshly in a rebuild, but they're almost in this limbo area of, hey, we're not going to be really bad, but we're also not going to be really good, and it kind of leaves us in this gray zone.
I don't know if the money was spent correctly here on the Titans for what their future is going to have, but if you are going to look at this Titans team and see that 6.5, they're built to win 7-plus games, as you said, unless you just get horrific quarterback play out of Will Levis. Let's just say Will Levis is starting to take the next step and being a competent NFL quarterback. I'm not even talking top 15. Yeah. Let's just go top 20-ish. This team's going to win 7 games. The offensive line, I think, is going to be okay. The wide receiving core is very good. As you said, Hopkins and Ridley on the outside with Boyd in the middle. And then you take a look at Pollard in the backfield to add some explosion. And Spears as well. Look, I'm not having high expectations for the Titans. But I think you can make money. It's one of those teams that nobody is looking at to do damage in the playoffs. And I completely agree with that. But the way this team is set up and the way they spent money on wins, which, again, isn't going to be equivalent to me to winning that division, making a deep playoff run, or, heck, even winning a Super Bowl. But 6.5 wins, that is enough talent there. Once again, predicated for sure on Will Levis just being roughly an average quarterback. That's a 7-win football team. I'd take the over.
And that's why I don't see the bottom of this division as being that far down, which makes things even more interesting if the entire division is at least competitive. Will Levis last year, of course, came on very hot, 238 and 4 touchdowns in his opening debut, just 4 TDs to 4 interceptions in his next 7 starts. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It is deadline day in Major League Baseball. Less than 8 hours away from the 6 p.m. Eastern deadline. That is the trade deadline around the bigs. The final few hours for your favorite team, for the team you bet on to win a pennant in either the American or National League, to make that last maneuver, to bolster the roster, to be in true contention come October. Or maybe your favorite team is already focused on the future and you want them to sell like crazy at the deadline. That can happen too. Our guy, Craig Mish, our MLB insider, the host of Newswire, which starts at 11 a.m. Eastern time, is here on this deadline day on TEL. Craig, I have told the viewers, I tell you, if you get breaking news, if you get a text, if you get a call, you can ignore us. You can deal with it. We will have it live on air. That is my only hope for this segment, and it is good to see you.
Good to see you guys, too. It's early, so you know the later we would go into a show would be more of a chance on deadline day, because honestly, when the teams have waited this long to trade a player, it kind of means that they feel like they can do better on a deal. And so I'll talk a little bit more about how that process works as we get closer to the end of the segment, but that's kind of where teams are at right now.
We will certainly ask you the players that might be dealt and the teams looking to acquire here on deadline day, a deadline edition of the Daily Basis. Got to say today, Craig, I mean, of all days to yell that out, it would be deadline day in MLB. Our MLB insider, Craig Mish, breaking some news on Saturday afternoon. Jazz Chisholm traded by the Miami Marlins to the New York Yankees in his second game in pinstripes yesterday on the road in Philly. Two long balls now as a member of the Yanks. Craig, of course, you were the one to break the news and the details. What can Yankees fans expect of Jazz Chisholm now in the Bronx?
I don't know. he's one of those players that can, really shine in the limelight. And, you know, obviously other things can happen too. You don't know how players are going to react in New York. But he's now in the middle of a pennant race. This idea that he has never been in one is also false. 2020, also last year. So he's had that exposure to the postseason. So let's not get that twisted to start with. He also played in Donnie's favorite place in Citizens Bank Park in the playoffs last year. Okay, so he has gone through this. He's not a rookie at this. When you're hearing that, it's not accurate. But that being said, it's not so much Jazz, guys, as it is for players on the Yankees. You can go back to the 90s when they won the World Series several times, and you can go back to even these postseason races. One second. Okay, nothing. You can go back to these postseason races when teams have gotten deep into the playoffs in New York. There is something about putting on the pinstripes that sometimes gets the very best out of players. It's not necessarily something that happens over 4 years, 5 years, 2 years with a player, but you could absolutely see months of high-level production just because players get super energized by playing, of course, at Yankee Stadium. So Jazz, like others, probably going to get that little tick up here. The only thing that remains to be seen is that something sustainable for the next couple of years, or is it just for the next few months? But I am not surprised at all to see him pop on that uniform and pop off like he did last night.
Buyers and sellers, certainly, Craig, at the deadline, you saw a three-team deal that went down yesterday. We know the White Sox certainly are on the market to sell players. They are doing that. The Dodgers looking to make those moves. And also the Cardinals, how about this? Tommy Pham once again changes teams. Welcome back into St. Louis. What'd you make of that three-team deal yesterday?
I'm encouraged that the Cardinals are trying. I'm encouraged, of course, that the Dodgers are trying a little bit. I'd be very surprised if the Dodgers are done. I mean, this is a team that it's World Series or bust, a very rare. I know they say the Yankees are World Series or bust, but, I mean, let's be real. The Dodgers are really World Series or bust. So I think L.A. will probably do more. As far as St. Louis is concerned, getting Eric Fetty
if they get themselves, you know, I don't know, Donnie, into a seven-game series, is Fetty going to start game one or game two? Probably not. So it's more or less depth, game three, game four, with the scenario. Tommy Pham has now been on several teams in several years and some contenders. He's helped out quite a bit. And so I think he'll help out the Cardinals as well. But I just don't think any of those deals, that deal in particular, I'm sorry, will move the needle significantly for those teams in terms of the postseason. But good fortifying depth, I would say, for both squads.
How about these other notable Monday moves ahead of the deadline? The Braves get back their 2021 World Series MVP, Jorge Soler from San Francisco. The Astros acquire Yusei Kikuchi, and the list of other moves that you see on your screen. Craig, of these six deals, which one did you like the most?
All right, keep it up there for a minute, and I'll tell you. Yep. Okay, so, you know, Houston seemed to give up a lot for Kikuchi, and, you know, I think that's going to help the Blue Jays in the future, but I'm just not sure that the people making those decisions are going to be the same ones next year, but it seemed like a pretty good deal. You know, Cleveland is a very sharp franchise, the people who are running things there, and it seems to me that that's an under-the-radar move by getting Lane Thomas to get more right-handed. He's somebody that crushes left-handed pitching. He is going to help the Guardians, and they're going to get into the postseason, a team that we haven't talked about a ton. As far as the Braves are concerned, I think it's a deal for now, guys, and also for the future. There's a chance Ozuna could leave in a year or two. Now they lock in Soler for the next couple. This story, by the way, guys, let's just be honest with the Giants. What are they doing? You know, the Giants just signed Soler a few months ago. And now he's gone. A lot of questions, I think, going on in San Francisco for me.
Yeah, a lot more questions also will pop up with, are they getting rid of Blake Snell? If we take a look at some of the big names on the block today, Crochet, Flaherty, Snell, Robert, Rengifo, and Diaz. Or do we have any surprises, Craig, that we might anticipate by the deadline?
Yeah, it's still hard to say. Flaherty will get traded. Rengifo will get traded. I believe Yandy Diaz probably will be traded. Crochet, I'm still not sure. As I said, I believe last night I was on with Kevin. He asked me about a team that could make some surprise moves today. I think it's the Mets. The Mets would be the one team I would look for today as they sort of decipher how aggressive they want to be. They're in a much better position, guys, than they were last year. And with the Braves not playing as well as they have because of injuries, you would think that the Mets could potentially host some wild card series at Citi Field. Got to put that pedal down. I would look for the Mets to make some moves today.
15 seconds left in the segment. Somebody call or text Craig Mish. Where's Garrett Crochet going? Somebody right now, please.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
All right, Newswire, 11 a.m. Eastern time. Donnie will be back. We'll be back here too next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I swear to you, if Craig Mish breaks news at some point today, especially if it's like prior to noon, I'm really upset we didn't get it here on the early line on deadline day, but make sure you are following along on Newswire. I know Craig's going to be checking the phone. That starts at 11 a.m. Eastern time. And of course, his social media feeds throughout this afternoon on deadline day, just about 7.5 hours left until 6 p.m. Eastern time for your favorite MLB team to make some maneuvers here ahead of the deadline.
Should be fun to watch it play out. And we're hoping a superstar player that we maybe didn't think was on the block actually winds up on the block and get that trade speculation, because we want that seismic shift to say, oh boy, now we got a game heading down the stretch. And hopefully it's the Phillies. Hopefully it's the Yankees. It's the Orioles. It's the Dodgers. Let's see some of these teams ante up here and try to get themselves really into that race saying, we are the front runners now. Let's see if we can win a World Series.
Yeah, it would be sensational for sure. Again, trade deadline in Major League Baseball, 6 p.m. Eastern time. All right, now we set the stage for this Tuesday in the Olympics. Again, as we shared, the Americans in women's rugby sevens making it to the semifinal round, to the medal contention round for the first time in its history. Came up short against New Zealand, the gold medal favorites, 24-12, but did cover as a 19.5-point underdog. Do we know who they are taking on for that gold medal match? I will try to find it here at some stage so we can make sure that we know who they are. The bronze medal match, in women's rugby. Nobody? Nobody can help a brother out? All right,
no.
We'll figure it out here, who they take on for that bronze medal, looking for their first ever medal in terms of women's rugby since rugby sevens was added to the Olympic Games back in 2016. Donnie, that was me trying to fill some space and time.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's your time to shine.
All right,
the Americans.
I got questions now.
Yeah. Oh,
hold on. I got questions now. See, we go geographically here in the Olympics sometimes because we learn new things. Like what's going on with Great Britain? What's going on with England and how that's deciphered?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this: the U.S. are going to play Guinea's men's team, right? Is that Papua New Guinea? Is Guinea and Papua New Guinea separate here? Is there a Mama New Guinea? Like, what are we doing out here in these streets? Like, how did this change at this point? That's what I want to know. Like, give me some. Where is this place located at?
Did you just say Frieza, Mama New Guinea?
Yeah.
Did you just say Mama
Papa,
New Guinea?
Papa, Mama, sister,
I don't know.
Brother?
I don't know how much this borders on insensitivity, but we can tell you the odds for the games against
Papa and Mama.
Guinea,
what do you mean insensitive?
That we have.
Mama and Papa. Come on. Nothing insensitive about that. I'm just worried.
The Americans
like,
are in
the same country. Yeah, same country or not.
I don't believe so. We don't know where our research
Everybody's
team
stumped.
Is at this moment. Here's what we do know. The Americans more than likely need to win this game. No, they are separate. Guinea and Papua New Guinea, different nations that are represented in the Olympic Games.
That's a rival.
The United States
now.
Minus 220 on the match money line to win today in their final action of group play against Guinea in the men's soccer tournament to advance and get to the knockout round. Donnie, will the Americans, your favorite soccer nation, do just that?
Look, I actually think the Americans, start off the tournament playing the best team in France, and it was a bad look right off the bat. It's like, you know what, let's ban this soccer team. Why are we even playing at this point? But I feel like maybe it was just a bad draw. Like, what happens if we were to play Guinea in round number one or the first game here or somebody else where you can easily pummel them and move forward? So maybe I'm looking towards that they can get out into the knockout stage and maybe get into the medal rounds here because you're not facing the best team once again, which technically would be France now. So I do expect another win by Team USA. I expect the women's national team to continue to win, and maybe we can get back our holding here as a great soccer nation. If the women's team can win gold, the men's team can maybe get into the medal round, that would be pretty good.
Listen, we know that where things stand currently in basketball, a couple of results today on the men's side. Greece and Giannis Antetokounmpo 0-2. Spain knocks off the Greeks 84-77. Canada, a perfect 2-0 at the Olympic Games, 93-83 in a victory over the Aussies. The host nation in France will take on Japan in just a couple of moments, starting in about 45 minutes. Victor Wembanyama and the French side, a 16.5-point favorite. Simone Biles and Team USA in the team all-around final, minus 1,100 to get back atop the podium, favored to win a gold medal. Baseball breakdowns on trade deadline day. How do we handicap it up next?
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It is deadline day in Major League Baseball. Will players be traded while games are being played on this Tuesday evening? Will they have to say their farewells in the fourth inning in the dugout, as we saw Christopher Morel have to do over the weekend for the Cubs as he was dealt to Tampa in exchange for Isak Paredes? That is all that is at stake today, which makes the handicapping a little bit unusual. Instead of your usual full 15-game Tuesday slate in Major League Baseball, we start with a potential World Series preview continuing today in Philadelphia. The Yankees mashing 6 home runs last night in Philly for a 14-4 win over the Fightins. The Phils just 3-7 since returning from the All-Star break. They turn to Aaron Nola today, but on the other side, in this ace affair, It's Gerrit Cole for the Pinstripes. Minus 118, Philadelphia, a slight home favorite at the bank today. The total is 9. We have seen a lot of line movement from the overnight numbers that you were seeing there earlier this morning on your screen. What do you make of all this market movement, DRS?
We had 18 runs yesterday scored in a pitching matchup that had Zach Wheeler coming in with like a home ERA of like 1.5. And you take a look at Heel, who's pitching much better, easily going with that number. You have similar conditions weather-wise today, 82 degrees with a double-digit wind blowing out the center field. If we are looking from a pitcher-to-pitcher matchup, theoretically, Aaron Nola is the better pitcher, at least over the past 60 days since Gerrit Cole has come back. And also keep in mind, Gerrit Cole, who did have a decent little stint of a couple games, got blown away in his last start. So he's looking for a bounce back. But also that Phillies offense is looking for a bounce back effort today. If we're going lineup by lineup, there's stars all across the board on both teams. One team is hitting. That's the New York Yankees. They crushed one of the best pitchers in baseball yesterday. One team is not. That's the Philadelphia Phillies. So you're measuring yourself. Can the Phillies hit Gerrit Cole? Has been struggling at the Gerrit Cole that we know. I would give a slight edge once again to the Philadelphia Phillies today, but these are hard ones. Sometimes you just go up against a team where it's like, we don't have our A game. It looks like the other team is rounding into form. So it's a tough handicap, but the Phillies are at home. Slight favorite. I would go that direction, but the total also is interesting. I told you yesterday, good weather conditions for hitting, great pitchers, 18 total runs. You're probably more likely to get runs today than not, so maybe an over as well.
DRS, Gerrit Cole, of course, made his debut in the middle of June in this 2024 MLB campaign. He's only had 7 starts. In two of those 7 starts, he has faced the New York Mets in the subway set. He has given up 6 earned runs against the Mets in each of those 2. In 4 of the other 5, 2 earned runs or less. In 3 of those 5, just a single earned run allowed. But of course, when you haven't started all that many games, the ERA is going to reflect those bad outings. He is 3-2 this year with a 5.40 ERA. Philadelphia needs to start their winning ways once again. Will the offense be on the uptick today for the Fightins? Now we go to Southern California in a California rivalry between the San Diego Padres and the LA Dodgers. San Diego playing some great baseball since the break. Same for LA. They are 7-3 since returning from the All-Star break. Tyler Glasnow goes up against Matt Waldron. Glasnow and the Dodgers, a slight road favorite at minus 134 on the road in San Diego. Total at 7.5. What do you like tonight in this California clash?
Glasnow last 60 days out here, 63 xFIP minus, which is a very good number, and also in a pitcher's ballpark. You might be finding yourself saying, okay, if Glasnow's the best that the Dodgers have to offer, and the Dodgers are a very good team, why are they going up against the Padres, who have been playing better baseball, as you pointed out, Ben, but maybe not that pedigree pitcher on the mound that should be 150 or higher at this point? Well, the reason being is the Padres are playing very good, and also the Padres are at home. If we're lining up this team, too, because Matt Waldron will be on the mound, last 74 batters he's faced from the left-hand side, a 116 ISO and a weighted on base percentage of 215. That's Otani. That's Lux. That's Hayward. That's Outman. That's Biggio in that lineup. So you're going to focus on the right-handed batters. So on this season, Waldron has been really good against Ben. A 129 ISO and a weighted on base percentage of 288. But let's flip it over to the last 30 days. That completely changes. That 129 ISO power number, Ben, elevated to a 333. That 288 weighted on base percentage on the season, now elevated to a 491. I know it's a square play here in this environment. I'll trust Glasnow and the Dodgers lineup more so than Matt Waldron on the mound. That's the way I'd go in this one.
The Dodgers avoided a sweep in their weekend set against the Astros, had Monday off. The Padres nearly had a sweep over Baltimore in Camden, the O's taking the finale. San Diego had won 7 consecutive games entering their weekend finale in Baltimore, now return home. The opener of a series yesterday in Wisconsin getting started with the Brew Crew laying it on the Braves, an 8-3 victory for the Brewers. They're a home favorite today against the Braves at -122. The over-under is 9. What's the play today between the Brew Crew and the Braves?
Yeah, not a lot to trust here with the Atlanta Braves just yet. I know they're getting some help on the way. I don't know if Jorge Soler is going to be able to get into that lineup and pay any dividends for them. But Bryce Elder will be on the mound, the right-handed pitcher. His last 45 batters he's faced, a 195 ISO and a weighted on base percentage of 353. If you look at the season as it played out, 180 batters Elder has faced, a 160 ISO, which is okay, but an elevated weighted on base percentage of 371. Now you flip it over and say, okay, what's the Atlanta lineup going to do against Joe Ross? No statistics over the past 30 days.
series. On the season, he does have some decent numbers. But if we are looking at the lineup today, going up against right-handed pitching past 30 days, Riley is elevated, Ozuna's elevated, and Travis d'Arnaud is elevated here. The rest of that lineup, a lot to be desired. I know it sounds like a broken record on a day-to-day basis. We don't even have great pitchers here, but it's really hard to back an over and or the Atlanta Braves in this type of spot. I think Milwaukee probably picks up the victory, and I think this game probably stays under the total as well.
Yesterday, a slight over because of the eight runs, a three-run shot off the bat of Willy Adames, Jackson Churio adding in a late two-run bomb as well. Now let's go to a matchup in a midweek series that features two teams in the thick of wild card contention in their respective leagues. The Twins in the American League, the Mets in that very contested and tight race in NL wild card contention. The Amazons, a slight favorite at home today inside Citi Field, -125. Total 8.5 yesterday. The Mets scored 15 runs to win 15-2 in the opener. Does the offense continue on this Tuesday evening at Citi Field?
They should score again, talking about the Mets, but let's focus on the pitching matchup here to start. Manaea, the left-handed pitcher, is going to be on the mound for the New York Mets. Past 30 days, 124 batters. He's faced a 165 ISO. Very manageable. How about a weighted on-base percentage of 302? Very manageable. You also take a look at that Twins lineup that I do like, but against left-handed pitching, I don't like all that much. You take a look at Royce Lewis, Carlos Santana, and Christian Vasquez. Everybody else really struggling against left-handed pitching. Now let's go over to the Grimace Mets at this point. They've been having quite some fun here at the plate as of late. And also, David Festa on the mound. 43 batters faced over the past 30 days. Check out these numbers, Ben. ISO power number against, 463. Weighted on base percentage against, 474. The New York Metropolitans again in the win column tonight for me, Ben.
I like that look for you, DRS. The Grimace Mets in this era, 28-13 since June 12th. A day that will be revered in Metropolitan history for a very long time. That's when Grimace threw out the first pitch at Citi Field. A proud organization, 16-8 in the month of June, off to a 16-9 start here in July with more baseball to be had. The New York Mets have been sensational here as of late. And Donnie, I think it's a really interesting day for teams like the Twins and the Mets. Are they going to buy ahead of the deadline? Craig Mish did not break any news for us, sadly, during the daily basis. But before he departed, and of course, Newswire coming up in less than 20 minutes, he said a surprise team to keep an eye on. He expects the New York Mets, in the heat of a wild card race in the National League, to buy at the deadline. We know Uncle Steve, Steve Cohen, the owner of the Amazons, has the largest pocketbook in Major League Baseball. Could be very interesting to see what New York does on this Tuesday.
No, it does. I'm interested. Again, there's going to be some surprise action. The teams that we always thought were going to make moves here. Just a few weeks ago, why would the Mets buy anything? And maybe talking about selling, you know, Pete Alonso at the deadline. That's no longer the case. They're playing just as good at baseball as anybody. Certainly much better than the first place Philadelphia Phillies.
That is very true. More MLB plays up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A midweek series continues under the arch on deadline day in Major League Baseball. The counter now just over 7 hours until the 6 p.m. Eastern time trade deadline in the bigs. Will the Rangers make some moves? The Cardinals have already made some acquisitions, acquiring Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham from the Chicago White Sox yesterday. The two teams face off once again today. Texas takes the opener in the Lou 6-3 yesterday. The Rangers were swept this weekend by the Blue Jays. They entered victorious in five straight, seven of their last nine. So a much-needed win to start off this new week over the Redbirds yesterday. A road favorite under the arch today, Max Scherzer, who was brilliant in his most recent start last week, gets the nod once again today for the Rangers.
Yeah, how about this? You know, getting a little bit more length there from Max Scherzer, I think this is going to help them out. And if he can get to the sixth and the seventh innings here, maybe there's something to the Texas Rangers bouncing back from that terrible weekend that they had. If we're just looking at pitching matchups over the past 60 days, xFIP minus numbers here, Scherzer's a 93. Very good. You take a look at Lance Lynn, a 109. That's above average. And also taking a look at Lance Lynn over the past 30 days, 89 batters that he's faced. How about this? ISO power number of 208, weighted on base percentage of 357. But let's do a lefty-righty breakdown here. Lefties, an ISO power number of 314 over the last 46 at-bats against Lance Lynn, and a weighted on base percentage of 459. Right-handed batters, not faring all that well. So if you're looking to take a look and say, I don't want to bet this game just by side or total. Take a look at Corey Seager, 70 at-bats against right-handed pitching over the past 30 days, a 286 ISO and a 438 weighted on base percentage. It is Dinger Tuesday at the FanDuel Sportsbook. There's a legitimate chance Corey Seager gets a dinger tonight, but maybe an RBI option might be the best look there. I would still go, if you're just looking to take a side, I think you got the better pitcher right now on the Texas Rangers and Max Scherzer. I would go that way with that cheap price.
Corey Seager got the scoring started yesterday in St. Louis, an RBI double to open up the offense. A doubleheader yesterday at Camden Yards between the Orioles and the Blue Jays. High-scoring affairs in both. Baltimore takes game one, 11-5. Their catcher, James McCann, got belted in the face by a pitch. His nose was going away. No nose should ever go. Was bleeding. Put a couple of tissues up there and stayed in the baseball game and caught behind the plate. What a warrior that guy is. The Blue Jays responded with a victory to split the doubleheader on a Monday, 8-4 in the second game. Are we going to see the offense continue? You would think probably not, with Corbin Burnes on one side getting the start for Baltimore. The O's now a full $2 favorite inside Camden.
By the way, yeah, certainly a tough guy award yesterday, but let's have some sanity within the organization for the Baltimore Orioles.
Oh,
the dude is a catcher, a 95-mile-an-hour fastball to the face, probably had a concussion, obviously not going to admit it, and the guy couldn't even see at the end of the game. Like, what are we actually doing at that point here? Just ridiculous stuff, but certainly a tough guy here. I mean, Ben, look, we can litigate it. You know what I mean? So down the road, McCann's probably going to make himself an extra $5 million on that game when he does say he has a concussion, or it comes up today, he's on the 7-day IL on that concussion list. Now, will the runs continue today? Probably for Baltimore. Bassett, not a great pitcher. Last 30 days, he's been hammered by lefty and righty batters. Yesterday, I thought Anthony Santander in game number two was a great look there for an RBI. He didn't get one, but through his last 71 at-bats against right-handed pitching, a 328 ISO and a 450 weighted on base percentage in the middle of that lineup as a switch hitter, I think he certainly does some damage. But we were talking about one player who maybe if Toronto was selling was Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He looks like he's ready to get back to his MVP quality self. Been scorching the baseball as of late. 315 ISO and a 420 weighted on base percentage over his last 81 at-bats against right-handed pitchers. But granted, this isn't your normal everyday right-handed pitcher that you're getting on the mound of Corbin Burnes, which is why they're a $2 plus favorite at this point. Baltimore is going to win, but I do think we will have some offensive fireworks possibility here on the side for Baltimore. 83 degrees down there, Camden Yards, 9-mile-an-hour wind blowing out. We should get some runs from an Oriole perspective today.
We saw runs yesterday in Baltimore. We saw some runs yesterday in Boston. The Red Sox knock off the Mariners to start off their midweek set 14-7. A football score, as Donnie Wrightside shared earlier in the show. How about this? The Red Sox debut of one James Paxton, who, of course, was pitching for the Dodgers this year. His most recent start, his last start in L.A., was against the Red Sox, wasn't all that bad. The Dodgers won that baseball game. James Paxton might come back to reality a little bit. If you are a Fenway fan, you are saying to yourself, guy's got an 8-2 record. We're winning this baseball game. We're booked as a home underdog against Seattle. We'll be good. But he's got a 4-4 ERA. He's 8-2 because he played in L.A. Will the good times continue for Paxton in Fenway?
I think the good times are going to continue for that scoreboard, which should get worked on today. 80 degrees out there at Fenway, 10-mile-an-hour winds blowing over the monster, and Paxton is a left-handed pitcher, which means Seattle is going to line up 9 right-handed batters to go up against him. And if you're wondering how Paxton has done over the past 30 days against right-handed batters, close to a 300 ISO and a 500 weighted-on-base percentage. Paxton, once again, just like every single time he pitches, is the worst analytical pitcher on the card. Now,
You look at that Seattle lineup. It's not exactly murderer's row out there. You got Arozarena and Raleigh with really high numbers along with Garver. Everybody else has flat-out stunk against left-handed pitching. But this isn't your normal left-handed pitcher. This is a terrible left-handed pitcher. So we should get runs today. And if you want to take a look at maybe a sneaky team total with a team that doesn't really have great bats, it just might be the Mariners today. It's a perfect matchup for them today to let you, say, score 5 to 6 runs if they can.
Seattle confounds me. They swept the White Sox this weekend. Great. We'll talk Chicago in just a moment. Outside of that, though, the Mariners have dropped 9 of their last 10 games. Speaking of Chicago, oh boy, will it be 16 consecutive losses for the White Sox against the Royals? Why can't I find it? There it is. Minus 190. KC, the favorite today against Chicago. 8.5 is the total. I wonder if Luis Robert Jr. is going to be there by the time this game takes off. I wonder if Garrett Crochet will be a member of Chicago by the time we reach first pitch, 8:11 p.m. Eastern time. Will it be 16 straight losses for the White Sox?
Yeah, it might be. And you're right about it, too, because the one thing, we do have the deadline coming in at what? I think it's 4 o'clock this afternoon. So you will know who the players will be playing tonight. Let's just say if Robert stays. So he's not going to be pulled out of the game because the deadline would have already happened. But if he is gone before the game, I don't know how they score. The morale has got to be terrible in Chicago. There's no way. Like, Michael Wacha should have an easy time with this lineup, and the Royals should get this easy victory.
Bobby Witt Jr., 2+ total bases, minus 180. Crack. 3+ total bases is plus 115. DRS, enjoy the money line in College Corner next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Tuesday edition of the Early Line, rounding out the show. We'll take one final look at some Olympic action that is about to get underway in your afternoon over there in the evening hours in Paris. Of course, it is trade deadline day in Major League Baseball, just over 7 hours away from the 6 p.m. Eastern deadline. Your favorite team, the team you have bet on to win a World Series, it is their last time to make a move, to bolster up the roster, to be a true and World Series contender. Maybe your team flat out stinks and you're already focused on the future, trying to acquire some prospects and sell at the deadline. My focus is always college football, and we are not all that far away from football being here. Thursday is August. College football games will be played in that month, starting Saturday, August 24th, just about 3.5 weeks away. And, of course, the 2024 college football season holds a lot of changes in store. Realigned leagues that we have broken down for you here, and maybe most notably, the expanded now 12-team college football playoff. There are so many storylines that offer intrigue entering the 2024 campaign, whether it is conference realignment and expansion. What do those traditional rivalries now look like in new leagues? Maybe it's just your favorite team and how you feel about college football in this altered landscape. One of my favorite storylines, and something I'm going to be paying attention to, is what the selection committee does for the college football playoff now with 12 teams. Here's what we know of the format. 5 automatic bids given to the 5 highest ranked conference champions. That does not necessarily list out the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, and SEC champ, and then one of the group of 5 conferences, but that's generally how things are structured. So 5 automatic bids to the 5 highest ranked conference title winners, and then 7 at-large bids. What I am most fascinated by is not the automatic berths and how that plays out with the AQs moving forward, but how the College Football Playoff Committee is going to rank throughout the year and then ultimately on Selection Sunday decide those at-large bids. Because let's look at the 10 best prices to reach the College Football Playoff. You will see in this list of 10, 5 SEC schools. That's Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Alabama, LSU. 4 Big Ten schools, that's Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, and Michigan. And 1 independent program, that is Notre Dame. Of the 10 best prices to reach the CFP, 5 come from the SEC, and 4 come from the Big Ten. And then you have an independent school in the Fighting Irish. There on your screen, you see seven teams: Ohio State, Georgia, Oregon, Texas, Notre Dame, Penn State, Ole Miss, that have a minus money price projected, expected to reach the college football playoff in 2024. And that, of course, does not take into account the three other automatic bids that will be given to the three other conference champions that are not the Big Ten and the SEC. And of course, you have to take that into account here as well when you look at these odds. Not all of these teams in this top 10 can reach the college football playoff because you have three automatic berths to give out for the champs of the ACC, the Big 12, and whatever group of five league is the highest ranked in terms of its conference title winner. Does that mean if we are to follow the odds makers, where of course there is so much uncertainty because it is the first year, and any time it is the inaugural year of something, there is so much to learn. There is no track record that has been set. It starts to be displayed in 2024. But if we are again to follow the odds makers, does that mean that every at-large berth comes from the SEC or the Big Ten? Will the ACC and the Big 12 simply be a one big bid league for whoever wins that conference championship? The odds makers are anticipating that bias to be a big part of the selection criteria for the college football playoff committee, which of course should inform your handicapping. Florida State has the 11th best price to reach the college football playoff, just outside the top 10 at plus 130. But if you think the Seminoles are a college football playoff team, more than likely it's FSU winning the ACC as the favorites and maybe not truly being in the running for an at-large to the college football playoff. There is so much to learn with so many new things in store for the 2024 college football season. I'm Ben Stevens. Donnie Wrightside back. We'll talk to you tomorrow, 8 a.m. Eastern time on the Early Line.